Hi, everybody. My name is Mike Finnegan. I'm an alcoholic. And by the grace of the power I found through the 12 steps and the love and support of people like you, well, like some of you, I haven't found it necessary to drink or use drugs today. No dry goods for me. And for that, I'm very grateful. I want to thank Amir for asking me to share with you tonight. I understand you get a lot of powerful speakers here. And tonight, you're going to get cunning and baffling. So if I say anything that disturbs any of you, that'll make me happy. So you talk to Amir about that. You know, I'm not taking responsibility for none of that. Real alcoholic. So I'm not an AA speaker, in quotes, whatever that is. Well, there are some. I'm just an AA member. I'm glad to be here. I came to this meeting for 10 or 15 years, starting my sobriety dates July 19th, 1986. It impresses the hell out of me. I want to congratulate everybody that took chips tonight. That's really wonderful. And the birthday people, too. That's fantastic for our new friends. When you see people take a chip or a cake, especially, you know, that's evidence. That's what you look at as evidence. You know, no matter how hard you may think it is, the evidence is that you can do it. You know, the people that are in Alcoholics Anonymous are not special. They're sure as hell different, but they ain't special. They're not special. It's like, well, they're sober, but I can't do it. You know, like hell you can't. You know, and I want to thank Nina for a very good talk. That was a good AA talk. And by that, I mean she told the truth about herself and told us about how she got here and how she stayed here. I don't talk about what it was like. Shit, it's the same as it was. I'll tell you about what I was like, what happened and what I'm like now. It, who cares? It ain't the problem. The problem is Finnegan. I was thinking about, and I wanted to also give a shout out to Bernard that read chapter 5. And the reason I do is because, you know, he seemed somewhat nonplussed by the challenge of reading chapter 5. But everybody in this room wants you to succeed. You know, if you come up here to read, people want you to do a good job. They want you to do well. And not only with reading, but in the whole thing. You know, this is different than any place out there, man. You know, everybody in here is pulling for each other. Ain't nobody against you in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody wants you to do well. You're not going to find that too many places. But you're going to get it here. And I like that announcement about if you do this too much, if you make too much noise, if you're too obstreperous or whatever that description was, that you may be asked to leave. You know, and I thought, yeah, I've seen that happen a few times. I remember about 10 years ago, I was speaking at this Alcathon. That's one of my favorite words. Hey, we're going to an Alcathon, you know. What the hell's that, you know? You know, try that out on your civilian friends and see what they... An Alcathon, man, I thought that's what you've been doing, you know. I spoke at the Marina Center, and they got... It's a clubhouse down there, It was Christmas night, which is like being asked to speak at a wake. They had speakers all day. They got like speakers round the clock on Christmas Day. Like, for those of you who are so fucked up, you got to come here on Christmas Day all day. But they had a turkey and some tired potatoes. But by the time I was the last speaker that night, And a friend of mine was the guy that just preceded me, and we went down there together. We were thinking, Jesus, what did we do, you know, to get this job? And we go in there, it's like about eight people, and I think six of them were in a turkey coma, you know. And I've seen better crowds than, well, I'm not going to tell you, but anyway. So while my friend was speaking, this outdoorsman came into the meeting and stood in the back and started and was going, I want to hear some recovery. He was, you know, he had that good alcoholic stand, you know, like. And my friend was like, he'd been sober a long time, so he kept going and just, I want to hear some recovery. You know, and so I went up to him and said, hey, come on out here. I took him out in the back. I said, I'm going to talk to you about recovery. He goes, thank God. You know, we get out there and I start talking to him about step one. And I could tell that he'd had a few. Because, well, it's just seeing him stand, I saw that. But you know, he had that nice whiskey bouquet around him. And I'm talking to him. You know, he wants to go back in. And I'm going, well, hold it, you know. And after about 10 minutes, I kind of lost him. And he was... You know, absent an audience, he was not that interested in recovery, it turned out, which really hurt my feelings. And all of a sudden he goes, hey, man, what time is it? And I said, it's about 8:45, and I'm going to speak in about 15 minutes. You should stay because I'm going to talk about you, and I'm going to talk about recovery. And he goes, man, I got an appointment, you know. So, you know, if you're asked to leave the meeting, chances are you deserve it. You know, and that's, you know, like they told me, you know, it's like a lifeboat. And when you come to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and you're, you know, either grab an oar and row or grab a bucket and bail, but do something. You know, don't just cause trouble. And because lives are on the line, you know. I'm glad that when I came to AA, there was people here. There were people in the room. First meeting I went to, there were people there. And I'm grateful for that. I mean, they didn't have to be there, but they were. First guy I saw was going up the driveway. Now, my wife is sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she's been sober longer than I have, by about 2 months. Which she reminds me of occasionally because she wants to help. It's all about service, you know. It's kind of like having an extra sponsor, you know, that's sleeping with you. But my wife had gone to her first meeting. That was her first meeting. And I very chivalrously agreed to go with. Not because I was an alcoholic, but because I was trying to do something nice. And I weighed about 265 pounds. And there's a lot of calories in a cornfield, I'll tell you. So I was wearing my booze, you know, and I was kind of gray, and I've seen pictures. My wife still has pictures to remind me of, you know. So I looked like death on the corner eating a lifesaver, but I was wearing, like, I put on some, like, leisure suit or some shit, you know, like, it was 86, remember, so. And I was waddling up the driveway to this meeting, and the first guy I saw stepped out and went, "You need help." Which, you know, I went, "Oh, thank you." He goes, "You're new, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, I'm not really. I'm just here with a friend." And I said, "Why did you think I was new?" And he said, "Because the only place I've ever seen eyes like that are either newcomers in AA or a dog loose on the freeway." And so that, you know what, I was in such bad shape, that didn't offend me. I was like, I'm standing out in this place, man, you know. And but anyway, I don't really have a talk. I just get up and talk. I don't have a pitch. But I'll tell you a little bit about my background. I grew up in a small town in Ohio, and in Troy, Ohio, you know, that thriving metropolis. And, you know, 10,000 people just north of Dayton. You might have been there you're alcoholics, you could have wound up there. But anyway, I was the oldest of three boys, and we didn't have much. We were kind of poor, but we really didn't know it, and had a lot of love. Neither one of my parents were alcoholic. They didn't. My mom would have a drink, you know, on Christmas or something, and my dad grew up with an alcoholic father, so he was one of those guys that said, "I'll never be like him," and meant it. You know, we got a lot of people in AA ain't going to ever be like her or him, right? But then they are, you know. And because apparently it's genetic, you know, there's a genetic predisposition involved. But it skipped a generation for me. I had Kellys on one side and Finnegans on the other, and a lot of colorful Irish relatives up there that were definitely alcoholic, but not right at my house. But my dad, he never had a drink. And after I learned something about alcoholism, I thought, Jesus, he needed a drink. You know, he was wound tighter than, you know. But anyway, so I didn't drink until I was about 18 years old. And when I was going to high school, all through school, I was always, you know, the usual alcoholic story of, like, didn't quite fit in, you know, there's something wrong with him. But fit in well enough. I was like Jason and I were talking about it before the meeting. The alcoholic is very much the actor. He likes to the outside world, he likes to present his stage character. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. That was me. You know, Mr. Wonderful, you know, but inside, basically terrified and uncomfortable most of the time. The way I managed to fit in to where I felt like I was getting by was by making grades and playing sports. And, you know, there's just a normal guy. By the time I got to be a senior, I was being recruited by about 70 or 80 colleges to play basketball. So I visited a bunch of schools and decided I'd go to the University of Kansas, which was about two levels above my talent level. But they made a mistake, okay? And that's when I had my first drink. And when I went out there, one of the main reasons I went there was because 1,000 miles from my house. And I felt like, hell, if I get that far away, I might feel all right. You know? I mean, it's like another country, man. I'll be a brand new guy, you know, and everything's going to be all right. But when I got to Kansas University, believe it or not, it's about 20 miles from Kansas City, and Lawrence is a pretty cool town. And it's full of dazzling urbanites from all over the country. And, you know, I fit in like spats at an Iowa picnic, you know. So, anyway, I was living in a jock dorm, which is where all the freshman athletes lived. And, in fact, if you're still living in a jock dorm when you're a junior, then they should just go ahead and put you in jail. You know, we're talking about, you know, socially inept. You know, a bunch of jocks. There's no tennis players in that dorm. No golfers. Just basketball and football players. And it was, you know, full of testosterone and tough guys and shit, you know. And everybody's talking about how much ass they kicked, how much ass they're going to kick, and so on and so forth, and which always makes you feel good, you know, if you're like a kind of insecure punk-ass sissy from Troy, Ohio. So, but these guys asked me to go drinking with them, and I was so thrilled. And I said, yeah. And I hadn't had a drink. You know, in my effort to fit in and do the right thing so nobody would know that I was really a coward and a frightened kid, I hadn't drunk because you're not supposed to drink if you play sports, right? Of course, they told me not to have sex, but I ignored that rule. And I didn't see any real reason how that could hurt me. Anyway. You know, youth. Anyway, so I go drinking with these guys. They didn't take me to a college bar. They took me to Kansas City to a grown-up bar with grown-up people in it. And, I was, like I said, insecure. I was the kind of guy, if I walked into a room full of people like this where I didn't know, I know a lot of you guys, but where I, a couple hundred people, where I don't know anybody, what I saw in the eyes of the people in the room was a look that says, what's that guy doing here? That's my perception. So I'm sitting there feeling, out of place as usual, really out of place. What do? There, beer and a shot, I'll have that, I know what alcohol was supposed to do. I'd heard about it. I'd seen it in Aunt Louise and Uncle Bill, and saw that it changed them, so I figured I stood back and waited for it to start changing me. And I'm sure it did, but my perception that night was that it changed you. It changed the room. It changed the way I experienced life. And what I saw in the eyes of those people after several rounds of beer and whiskey was a look that said, we love you. You good-looking son of a bitch. And that was just the men. Now, in the eyes of the women, what I saw was a look of hunger. Yeah, they wanted me. And so I'm going, man, this alcohol is all right. I mean, this is the shit I've been waiting for. So that began my journey to you. It took a while. I wasn't one of those guys that blacked out and started driving around and getting arrested. You know, I kind of did a nice slow descent, enjoyed. My drinking and using career can be broken into three periods. There was the fun years, and then it turned into the sick years, and then it became the dying years. That was the last 2 or 3 years where I was literally dying. And I got married in 1969, skipping back over. I dropped out of school before that, after a year and a half in college, and joined a band. And my parents were like, Jesus H. Christ, he had a 4-year scholarship and he's traveling around with musicians. He's dumber than we thought, but you know what? I'm still a musician. I've been a musician for 56 years. So that was actually a good decision. And, but at the time they thought it was insane. And it is, if you're a parent and you have a child that says he wants to be a musician or an actor or a painter, unless we're talking about house painting, that's like, good God, but anyway, I got married and my wife and I moved to San Francisco just a few months after we got married because I got a real good job. And when I got out there, I started recording with different people and my career really took off. And in the sense that, I'd gone from playing in upholstered sewers all over the country to playing with, people with a reputation and recording with people that were making records and making money. So, you know, within a couple of years, the gold records are going up on the wall, and I'm like, you know, pretty hot shit, you know, in my own mind. And I mean, success is certainly a wonderful thing. And I, you know, I'm not here to tell you that success is bad. I'm here to tell you that success for an alcoholic is maybe not so good sometimes because it tends to insulate you from the truth about your condition. Some of the hardest guys that I work with are guys that still have a couple of bucks. You know, I'm sponsored guys that got the house and the wife and the career, you know, I'm like, and they're like, yeah, this is a pretty good deal, you know, but they're not like desperate. You know, they still like their way a lot, you know, and I understand that. But that's, I mean, I had no clue that I was getting sicker. And my wife, we moved to Los Angeles in 1975. And a couple years later, had our first child, a daughter, Bridget. And 3 years after that, 4 years, we had a son. And that was, in that period, things were still good, still on the upswing, until I got arrested for cocaine conspiracy. And bumping the road, you know? It was a federal beef, as they like to say at Cry Help. I caught a case. You caught a case of what? You know, like, you didn't catch shit. You committed crimes, man. You're like, and anyway, it was 5 to 20 years. That's what I was looking at. And you know, if you ever get arrested by U.S. government agents, and you're accused of a federal crime, and you're facing 5 to 20 years in federal prison. That means your way stinks. I'm just going to make a blanket statement, you know. There's no exception. Your way stinks. And but I didn't see it that way. Oddly enough, the way I saw it was, man, this is bullshit. You know, this is so unfair. Why are they, go out and get the real guys. You know, I'm not that guy. I know that guy, and he knows another guy, but I'm not them, you know. And so all my protestations of innocence and how outrageous it was, it didn't really get me far. But I really lucked out because I wound up only having to do 3 years of probation, and that was really a blessing. But that didn't stop me. Another decade, you know. Before my attention was finally focused on dying. And that was when my wife left me in 1986 with our young children. They were 7 and 4. And, you know, I'm talking about that, but now I suddenly thought about Nina and being a newlywed. And Mark goes, Jesus, I married an alcoholic. What the, you know, like... I'm sick, but I thought that was funny. Like, guess what, honey? You know. But anyway, my wife left me because she should have left me, and the loan of my house was in foreclosure, and I woke up with her gone and our children gone, and I didn't know where they went because she didn't want me to know. And that was really when I hit bottom, and I didn't really realize that until years later. I'm in this empty house that I'm going to lose in a minute, thinking, you know, you're a failure in every department of life. You know, as a husband, you suck. You're dishonest, selfish, drunk, irresponsible, not loving. As a father, forget about it. No wonder she took him with her. As a brother, useless. As a son, my mother was still alive. I later found out that she'd been a member of Al-Anon for 15 years. I thought she'd just become an asshole. It's like, what happened to mom? You know. She's saying a lot of mean stuff, you know. She's telling me the truth. What the hell? You know, but the truth, we don't like that. But, you know, a failure as a son, I mean, a failure as a friend, there was nothing I could look at and say, you did good. You made a few bucks, but you know, you blew it on, you know, like I used to say, I blew it on alcohol, drugs, and women, and the rest of it I wasted. But, anyway, that got my attention, and we got back together after a couple of weeks. In the meantime, I hired a detective that I'd met in a bar. I mean, he told me he was a detective. He didn't detect anything, you know, like I gave him a couple $100 and, have you found her yet? No, man, I'm on it, you know. And I wanted to find her because I didn't know, I knew I had a couple of bucks in the bank because I had just gotten back from a job, and I wanted some money, and I needed to get to the bank that was my bank, and I didn't know which one it was. So I said, you've got to find her. I'm going into banks all up and down Ventura. Do you have an account under, no, we don't. You know, and looking at me like, and we're very glad, you know. But anyway, we got together, went to a marriage counselor, and this was just before my wife went to a treatment place for a very, very short time, just a couple weeks. And that wasn't on the agenda when we saw the marriage counselor, who talked to each one of us individually for about 5 minutes and then got us back together and said, I can't help you. We're like, what the hell? Why not? And she goes, looks at me and says, well, you're an alcoholic. I'm going, you just met me, you know. Is it because I haven't had a bath for a couple days? You know, I had that, you know, when you're a real alcoholic on the way down, on a, you know, on, you know, just on a, on roller skates to hell, man, you know, like you're, it's not, you can't hide it. I mean, you're, and what I remember is I was really busy. It wasn't because I lacked a sense of hygiene. It was just that I didn't have time. You know, I don't have time to take a shower. And besides that, I got to take my clothes off. You have to take your clothes off and you're a real alcoholic where shit happens all the time. You don't want to, you might have to make a move, you know, and you don't want to be standing around with no clothes on. And, you know, things come up, you got to make a move. You know? But anyway, yeah, you're an alcoholic. And I was like, what the? That is so, you know, how dare you? You know, you don't know me. And she goes, oh, yes, I do. You know. Then she looks at my wife and says, and I think you're an alcoholic too. And I said, well, by God, you're right about that. This woman is batting 500. And so that was a very quiet ride back to our house. I think we stopped at the liquor store so we could have a couple drinks and talk about what had just happened. But shortly after that, she took off and went to treatment without consulting me. And another offense against the king. And, you know... It's like, man, what the hell, man? I know I'm a failure in every department of life, but you could have talked to me about it, you know, get some advice, you know, about whether or not you should die drunk or get well. And so after that, and then I went not too long after that, I went on the road, and she, you know, stayed in AA. And I wanted to sober up, and I knew I couldn't do it because I was, when I'm traveling on a bus full of drunks. And but when I came back, I came to AA. I went into a hospital for a while, got detoxed, and came to you. I had a sponsor before I came because a guy I knew, this was another musician I did a lot of drinking with, and I hadn't seen him in a long time. And when I did see him, he looked so good, and he was like one of those guys that's worse than me. You know, everybody's got those guys, right? Yeah, I'm bad, but damn. And You know, the problem with me was I was around a lot of guys that were worse than me, you know, and a million people that weren't anywhere close to as bad as me, you know. But however, alcoholics, you know, figure that out. But this guy was looking good, and I said, man, Greg, I haven't seen you for so long. How you been? He goes, I'm doing good, man. What have you been up to? He goes, well, I got this gig, I'm doing that, and I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went, really? And he goes, yeah, you ought to try it. And I remembered that. So when my wife came out of treatment, I called him, and I said, my wife's newly sober, and I wonder if you'd come over and talk to her. He said, I'll come over and talk to you. I got a woman friend that'll talk to her. And he came over, he started reading out of the big book. You know, I had a gratitude-sized glass of Jack Daniels. But I had it in a dark blue plastic cup so he wouldn't know, right? Sure, I fooled him. And he's reading out of the book. You know, you see that big book, and even if you've never seen the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, when you first see it, you know it's bad. You know? It's like, I don't like that book. You know, like, I don't know what he's doing with it, but I know I don't like it. He started reading out of the book, and I'm going, after about 10 minutes, I went, just stop, man. I'll whatever you tell me, I'll do it. You know, and he goes, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I said, I don't know what that is. And he goes, that means you're going to go where I go and do what I do. And you're not going to drink or I'll whip your ass. You know, and I said, well, shit, man, I don't know if you can whip my ass. And he goes, well, I'm going to give it a hell of a try. He goes, because I don't want you making me look bad. And I was like, okay, you know. So he just started taking me to meetings and took me to meetings all over Los Angeles, every kind of meeting. Started taking me on panels. The joke was like, you know, the thing that he said to me the most was, get in the car. You know, like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing this. I'm going to pick you up in a half an hour. What? I'm taking you here. What for? You just get in the car. That's it. And that's what I did. And he started taking me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and teaching me the steps. And I remember balking somewhat when he told me I had to start writing an inventory when I wasn't sober that long. And I said, Dr. Bob said to keep it simple. He said, man, you don't know dick about Dr. Bob. You know, like, you know, come on. You're going to start quoting Dr. Bob? Please. And he said, if you keep it much simpler, you're going to be drunk. And, you know, then he said, here's what Dr. Bob said. If you go about this with one half the zeal you've been in the habit of showing when you're getting another drink, you'll be all right. And I said, oh, okay, Dr. Bob said that? So, and I was thinking about a drink every day. I mean, I didn't come in here like it's all seashells and balloons, you know. Nah, nothing like that, man. I was like, but I remember I heard a guy named Joe Gomez. And you know Joe? Yeah, well, he's hard to love. But we in AA can do it. We can love him. You know what? He saved my life among many other people. Because I remember him leading the meeting, and I had about 2 months or something, and I'm thinking about a drink every day. You know, I'm not drinking, but I'm thinking about a drink. And I'm just doing what I'm supposed to, and I'm telling my sponsor, I'm thinking about a drink. And he goes, wow, that's shocking. You know, and an alcoholic thinking about a drink, this I never heard. But Joe Gomez was talking about, if you're an alcoholic, he said at this meeting, you're probably not going to feel good for a while. He goes, you're probably going to feel pretty bad a lot of the time. You're going to be thinking about getting loaded. And you're thinking you can't do this. And you're thinking you don't like this. And you're thinking you can, you know. And you're just going to be uncomfortable. And he goes, and if you can't handle that, then get the fuck out of here and drink. And, man, that hit me, you know. And after the meeting, I went up to him and I said, man, that was really helpful. I really appreciate it. And he said, you heard me? And I said, yeah. And he said, good. You know, and I remember that. Saved my life along. I could give you a million instances like that where people said things that hit me and got my attention and kept me on board. Mainly, I was accountable. And being involved in the big book and learning the traditions and the steps, and my sponsor told me, he goes, Unity Service Recovery, the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and he said, a guy like you is going to need all three. And I said, really? Man, thanks. I don't need just unity, the fellowship. No, man, you need recovery, the 12 steps, and you need to be of service. You got to do all that. You know, it's not that easy. And, you know, I don't think you can do it, but I'm going to teach you how. And you know what? I just did it, you know. And so many, all the help and love I got in AA has meant so much to me, because none of what I say or none of what I recommend is my idea. You know, you can smell the original thinkers in AA. Smell like whiskey. You know, it reminds me of a friend of mine, this buddy of mine, whenever I'd call him up, when he'd see it was me, I guess, or something, and he'd, I was going to talk about you. But anyway, whenever he'd answer the phone, he'd go, whiskey. He was sober a long time, and I loved that guy. He was another guy that took me everywhere. But the way that my life has changed in ways that I can't even imagine, I talked about my daughter, and she's a nurse. My son's a musician like me, God help us. But, you know, he's not like me. He's better. But no rehab, no jail so far. Hey, we set the bar low, you know. And, you know, but they're grown people, and, like, they're doing well. My daughter, as a nurse, we look at her, my wife and I mean, she's helping people because she wants to, not because somebody said, you're going to die drunk if you don't. I mean, she's doing it on the natch. And we look at her and go, who is that? You know, I mean, is that our child? Where the hell did that come from? This person is interested in helping people. And she's like just a gem and one of the bravest people I know. She was born with a 12th neuron palsy, had no feeling in about 2/3 of her tongue. We'd wondered why she couldn't talk until we had her diagnosed after visiting so many doctors all over the damn country. And turns out she had to, like, work like hell to be able to learn to talk, you know, and did it. You know, she's got a slight speech impediment, but so what? If I had, you know, if I had balls like that, I'd be somebody. You know, that woman is, like, my hero. And my son is a good man doing good things. He is. He's a good man. I mean, he didn't have any obstacles like that, but he does right, you know. And it's just like being in here. Nina talked about it. You know, we do right, and the reason we do right is because it is right. And when we do right, we feel right. And we keep coming back because we know it's saving our life, and we know that when we're on this path, that we're not with our nose pressed against the glass wondering where the good life is and wondering why God won't help us and wondering why we can't have a peace. No, man, that's just a function of the ego, you know, that's always screaming for protection and telling you you're not good enough, you know, and that's a lie. You know, maybe the best thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that people come in here thinking that they're never going to be loved and they're never going to be able to love somebody in return, and that's another lie. You know, because what we do in here is teach each other 12 behaviors that teach us how to love. And we're able to pass it on, and we get to watch other people that thought they could never be loved and never love anybody else learn how to do it. So I'm going to keep coming back. Thanks.